We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It is our favorite time of the year here at the Black Effect. We're heading down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready, and remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast. Festival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Wake that ass up.
Early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Jess Hilarious, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Oh, they're not going to like this one.
We have Candace Owens.
Candace Owens.
Welcome.
Hello.
What's up, girl? How you feeling?
I feel great. A little tired. Had a wedding this weekend, but always feel great.
Back to New York. You're originally from here, right?
Yeah, I was born in New York, raised in Stanford, and then lived in New York after university for like 7 years. So I worked just 2 blocks away from here.
What part of New York?
Did I live in or?
Was born.
I was raised. Born in White Plains.
Oh, White Plains. Okay. Mm-hmm. By the Bronx. Okay.
What is the Candace Owens origin story? I mean, I know a little bit of it because, you know, me and you actually used to have a lot of conversations back in the day before she changed her number. But
he was mad about that.
I mean, I did change mine, but you know,
girl,
but
he was mad about that. Like, I've been hitting up, and she ain't going.
Because it kept going blue. I was like, yeah. Is she just ignoring me?
No, I wouldn't have ignored you. I would have answered. I changed my number. I try to do it every couple of years.
Okay, know? What for? What? Just because?
Well, because then you collect all these people that are texting you. You're like, actually, I don't want to talk to this person anymore. But right, I don't want to tell them. I don't want to talk to them anymore. Mm-hmm. So I just changed my number.
And I'm sure the more you grow, a lot of your family members hit you up for money and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's usually not family members. It's just random people from your past that haven't spoken to you in forever, but still have your number and will text you and ask for a favor.
Like Charlamagne.
No. It wasn't him. It wasn't about him. I actually should have messaged you my new number.
Where did all of this begin for Candace Owens?
You know, I feel like I have just a very regular story. Like I said, like I was born in New York, raised in Stanford. There was nothing, you know, particularly that stood out in my childhood that made me think that I was going to go into politics. I feel like I landed into politics kind of accidentally. Mm-hmm. And I say accidentally because I thought I was a liberal my whole life. You know, I thought I was on the left my whole life and really didn't pay attention to politics in any meaningful way. And then, you know, when Trump was running for office, I didn't want him to be elected. I was like, this, not because I thought he was a racist or a sexist, but just because I thought it was crazy to go from Obama, who had a certain decorum about him, mm-hmm. to suddenly this sort of brash New Yorker. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was weird when all of a sudden the people that liked Trump, you know, everyone thought he was like this iconic symbol of business. He was in rap songs. Everybody, you know, Trump was the status, flipped on him in 1 second. I didn't buy the narrative mm-hmm. that he was in the media for three, four decades. And suddenly you wanted me to believe overnight that he was like Adolf Hitler and a mm-hmm. racist. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't trust the media's narrative about him. And so I decided to actually listen to what he said. I still didn't vote for him in 2016, but I wanted to just listen to what he actually said. And then when I saw what he was saying versus how it was being reported, I just found it to be extremely dishonest. So I started researching more, learning more, and then I got kind of angry, like just with the lies, because I do think Black Americans are intentionally manipulated emotionally by the media and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of kept dumb but emotional intentionally by the school system. And I started reading up on like Thomas Sowell, Shelby Steele, a bunch of Black scholars I originally had dismissed as Uncle Toms, and you know, irony now is I get called up with Tom all the time. So I got what was coming, but yeah. And then I realized that actually I've always been a conservative. I just didn't know it. And economically speaking, of course, the conservative arguments make the most sense.
Does that bother you that people call you an Uncle Tom?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. First off, because if they read the book, Uncle Tom was the hero. Mm-hmm. but also because I get it. You know, how can I fault people for something that I would have engaged in for the majority of my life? I thought the same thing about Black conservatives. Like, I thought it was this betrayal, but I never actually understood it. It was just an emotional response. And I think that kind of is, if you come out of the public school system, I can't imagine how you could be a Black conservative when just the way that they even tell us our own history is just not true, you know?
Do you think that that's true with most people, though? Like, you know, like when you think of a Trump or just anybody, you're fine with them, but then you learn, like, their politics. You learn what they believe spiritually, and then you're like, you're turned off from it.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's necessarily the politics. I really do think the media plays the biggest part in it, because Trump, as far as I know, Trump's been, maybe he used to be a Democrat, but he's been a Republican and a conservative for a long time. I mean, we know he had to have been a conservative in terms of economics. Mm-hmm. You know, he's wealthy, so you'd be hard-pressed to find someone that's wealthy and, you know, advocating for Marxist beliefs. But, yeah, I just feel like it's more about the media wants power. The media has a vested interest in things politically, and they like to make us think that we're having this open conversation and we're learning the truth about people. But these are just hatchet smear jobs, libeling people, and I think deluding a ton of people to turn against their own best interests.
So were you more anti-media as opposed to being pro-Trump?
Well, no, I actually heard what he had to say, mm-hmm. I was like, that's a pretty solid pitch. I mean, it was his Dimmondale, Michigan speech particularly. He got up there and he just started listing all of the statistics in Black America in terms of poverty. I mean, these were just real statistics that he was talking about. And his pitch was basically like, you've been giving your vote to Democrats for 60 years. Why don't you just try something different? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a pretty good elevator pitch. Yeah. Like, hey, you've been doing the same thing for a long time. I'm not saying I'm amazing, but why don't we try something different and see if it gets better for you? And then suddenly I like flipped over to CNN and it was Don Lemon's like crying. You know, I think it was, I'm maybe being, but it was just, they were so dramatic and they were lying about what he said. They're like, he looked you in the face and told you you were poor. Like, I'm like, that's not what he did at all. Mm-hmm. So I just got interested. I'm a very curious, interested person. If I get interested in something, I will just take it all the way, read mm-hmm. books. And I'm like, why are they doing this? Like, why are all the media companies that I believed my whole life just lying about it? Just say what he actually said and let Black Americans decide for themselves. If that's a good enough pitch, they may have said no. I thought it was interesting, but the lying is something that I think is outrageous. It's gotten out of control.
I think it's worse now. I think it's worse now because not only do you have people who will just create the headlines based off what they feel you said as opposed to what mm-hmm. you said, you have people that will just straight up manipulate your audio, manipulate your video,
yeah,
just to push a narrative.
One of the wildest things, the craziest things that people say about me all the time, and it drives me crazy because it's literally made up. They're like, Candace said racism doesn't exist. If you go mm-hmm. find that headline mm-hmm. of Candace says racism doesn't exist, they didn't put it in quotation marks because I never said it. They were mm-hmm. like, Candace said racism doesn't exist because she's quote unquote never been a slave. The words never been a slave came out of my mouth, mm-hmm. but I never said racism doesn't exist. And mm-hmm. it was in the context of an entire speech the media knew that black people were not going to go watch the speech or try to find the original speech. They were just going to read the headline and react and be like, oh my God, Candace Owens said racism doesn't exist. Like, how could she say this? She's a hypocrite. She's a liar. This happened to her in her childhood.
Yeah, sued your high school for racism.
Yeah, so well, clearly, that's not what happened. I didn't sue my high school for racism. But
not protecting you during that time, I said, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said for not protecting you. They said
I just did deal with the media does.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I mean, I get it because it's something that I've talked about at length. But, you know, essentially I had the situation happen to me in high school where someone that I was actually best friends with left me horrific voicemails. They were racist voicemails. There's no other way to slice it.
And they called you a nigga because you didn't want
to
date him?
No. I think he was gay, to be honest. It was nothing about dating. I think this was kind of a circumstance of, like, I had my first beer. I'll be honest. I got a boyfriend, and I just stopped hanging out with my friends. Very typical high school stupid stuff. And this gay guy that I was friends with was, like, outraged by it. And one night he was out drinking with kids that were way younger than him that I had never met, and they left me horrific voicemails. I mean, like, bringing in, like, Rosa Parks. There was tons of threats.
They did what about Rosa Parks?
They were just,
they,
like, it was,
about Rosa
yeah,
Parks.
Like, it was, there was no way to slice it, but it was, they were extremely racist, and it was terrifying, too, because I didn't know who the phone calls were coming from. Long story short, one of the kids in the car happened to be the governor of Connecticut's son, so it became this sort of overnight political story, and while it was going on, and there were, like, news cameras in front of the school, I left school and just homeschooled for, I think it was about 6 to 8 weeks. And basically, we got reimbursed for the time that I was homeschooling, is what happened. But wow. Yeah, so wow. When people retell that story now, it's like she sued her school for racism and the NAACP helped her. And I'm like, no, the NAACP did not help me. They used my face and my name to fundraise for the NAACP, which is actually the reason why I don't like the NAACP. It's like a very valid reason because I was a little girl, you know, I was 16, 17 years old, and it was a really hard situation to go through as a child. You know, I'm not like I am now, 34 years old and married with that support system. It was kind of fame you don't want, you know. But I'm actually very grateful that it happened to me because it allowed me to really consider what the media was. Even though I was still a liberal, I knew what the media was. Like, I knew the media was all about selling a headline. I knew then I got an early lesson in the NAACP. I think organizations that never want racism to go away, because how are they going to fundraise? Like, if you're a CEO of the NAACP and you're earning X amount of dollars, you got to keep the racism narrative going on, or you're going to work yourself out of business. So the stuff that I talk about is always based on my experiences, you know? And yeah, so it's just crazy to see how it gets manipulated in the press.
Now, you said something earlier. You said that you wanted to listen to what Trump had to say. You said in 2016, you still didn't vote for him. So looking at the country now, right? Of course, there's Trump, there's Biden. Who do you think is better for our community?
Obviously.
Why?
Well, first and foremost, just for everybody, you should have a president that's, you know, not mentally deteriorating like Biden is. I mean, he's in full mental deterioration. It's crazy to pretend anything else that's happening right now. It's scary, first and foremost, because we have real enemies out there. And you have a person that can't lead. You know, he can't remember what he ate for breakfast. He's saying things. I mean, the amount of times that he keeps talking about his dead son as if he's alive, it's very alarming. And I don't say that with any ill will in my heart either, because he's showing signs of when my grandfather, who passed a couple of years ago, started, you know, his mind started diminishing, and you start to see those early signs of dementia. The way he walks, his gait, the way that he's falling, that this is crazy. Everyone should be outraged, whether you're on the left or the right. But in terms of the better candidate for Black Americans, I asked people the question, how were you living under Trump, the person that they told you was going to put us back into chains and we were all going to be slaves again? How was the economy under Trump, and how are you doing today? And every time you ask that question, everyone knows that they were living better under Trump, because he was deregulating the environment, and people were just living better under Trump. And he is, in my opinion, a better president, because at least he's telling you the truth and he's telling you what he actually thinks. You know, one of the things that I hated the most about him when he first came on the escalator, I was like, oh, he's way too brash. You know, Obama sounds way more polite. But I asked the question, do you want to be politely lied to, or have somebody that's at least telling you what they think about you in no uncertain terms? So, you know, I like Trump for a ton of reasons. And for me, it was always about the economic arguments. And I knew that he was going to be a better candidate for Black Americans because of that, especially, you know, build the wall sounded so wild, right? Back in 2016, it sounded wild. It sounded xenophobic, and I was saying, if these illegals get into the inner city communities, the first people that are going to be harmed are going to be Black Americans.
People actually were mad at you, right, when you got into the conversation with T.I. at the Revolt Music Conference, right? And you were saying that, and people didn't understand it, but it seems like people are understanding what you were trying to say back then.
Yeah, and I am so happy to have those moments, because, like, I think T.I. is a trash person. You know, I'll say that 1,000 times over, because first and foremost, I had spoken to T.I. prior to that event. Like, T.I. was the only person on stage that I actually knew. Mm-hmm. And for the same reasons that I met you, Kanye had put us in touch. We had talked. Mm-hmm. And I know that T.I. thinks more conservatively. So he was literally putting on a show. Mm. And so it just makes me wonder, especially with all the stuff that, like, came out in the Diddy lawsuit, like, who's controlling T.I.? Because that was wild. He was literally putting on a show. Like, he didn't know me on stage. Like, he was surprised I was saying the stuff. He was way more level-headed and rational when we were on the phone. And I still look back on the moment. I'm like, what was he doing? It was like a circus act up there. And he was doing something that I thought was harmful because we were actually having a great discussion. And yet he created a little moment. And that was all the media ran with, despite the fact we were on that stage for hours. They ran with that moment. And I was really upset about it. But you're right. I was talking a lot about illegal immigration and saying this is something that we need to pay attention to, because eventually the black vote's not going to matter. Something that they worked so hard for is not going to matter. They get enough illegals in. What are we at? 10 million under Biden? Mm-hmm. And they're doing it intentionally. Like, it's going to be the same thing that they did to black Americans in the 60s, what Lyndon Baines Johnson did when he established welfareism and the Great Society Act. They want to get these people in, offer them handouts, and turn them into economic slaves that will continue to vote for Democrats because they're getting free handouts. And it's incredibly racist, first and foremost. But because black Americans are still, a lot of black Americans, I should say, are still living under this deception that Lyndon Baines Johnson was a good president, even though he was an avowed racist. I mean, he hated black people. I mean, one of the, so many times, I mean, hard R referring to us as the N-word. I'll have those N-words voting Democrat for the next 200 years. And this man is being hailed as a hero because he had to sign the Civil Rights Act, essentially with a figurative gun to his head because the country was on fire. You know, JFK had just died, and there were riots in the streets protesting because of racism, and he did not want to sign it, but he did. And with the other hand, he signed the Great Society Act and incentivized welfareism and, you know, programs to incentivize not marrying black men. You know, to think that we had government agents knocking on the door, going into the homes of black women and being like, there better not be a man that lives here. We're just here to check mm-hmm. to make sure. If you want this check, dad can't be home. Every other ill that black America is facing today is because we've removed fathers from the home. So I am like a big, you know, I use my platform to talk about men a lot and the need for male leadership. Everything that is so harmful, this, you know, Me Too, false feminism, all of this crap, it's anti-man. And it's anti-man for a reason, because a society cannot survive without strong men. A household cannot survive without strong men. We need strong men to lead homes. And so the fracturing of the black family, I think, was the test. Like, you know, like we were the mice in the experiment, like, let's see how that goes. And now they're kind of doing that writ large. And I hate feminism so much. I can't even tell you, because what it's about is it's just an attack on men.
Oh, you just said a lot, Candace. So let's talk about some of these things. Now, you said a lot. Now with the politicians, right, with whether it's Lyndon B. Johnson, Trump, Biden, I think people are able to ignore a lot of their BS as long as they can get something done.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like. So that's why I don't even like to talk about the person. I like to talk about the policy. So what is the difference between traditional conservatives and MAGA?
Well, I would say between traditional conservatives and MAGA.
Yeah, like before what the conservative party was before MAGA and what it is now.
Yeah, so I think what you're describing is that there was this fracture in the conservative movement because people realized that when he was referring to the swamp, what he meant was it didn't actually matter if you were on the left or the right. They were all working together in D.C. and selling out all of America. I mean, there is no reason why you go to D.C. and become a multimillionaire. You're supposed to be there to serve the American people. You're there taking our tax dollars. So what was happening was these lobbying interests, like, you know, Big Pharma goes down and they lobby and they'll offer money to a candidate to go push a drug like the COVID vaccine. Or they'll lobby for war. It's like, you know, biggest lobby, of course, military industrial complex. So we're all suffering. You're going to work because these lobbyists are getting their incentives done by buying out these politicians. And so Trump kind of hit the scene as somebody who wasn't bought and paid for because he didn't need their money. He wasn't like a random congressman going to D.C. with no money. And he just started talking about the swamp. Like, it's not even Republican or Democrat. And I want people to wake up to that, because I'm not here like ride or die for Republicans. They all sell us out. Like, the stuff that they did during COVID is criminal. It's criminal. And
who was found on that?
Well, I mean, just the free handouts. First off, trillions of dollars. You're signing these omnibus bills. If you read into it, where that money is going, it's insane. It's mm-hmm. literally going, you know, to museums, boards of museums. They're quite literally money laundering is what's happening when they sign these bills. But they keep it so that the information level is so low for Americans that it's like, oh, COVID's so bad. Like, we're going to give you a check that's like, you know, $300. This basically describes welfareism, right? Like, despite the fact that there's been trillions of dollars since the establishment of welfare, Black Americans are poorer today than we were before it. People don't know this, but during the time of Jim Crow, before welfare was established in the 1950s, Black Americans were actually outpacing white Americans in this country in terms of economic growth. And the reason for that was because our families were together. We had good values. The government only wants to give you the bare minimum. But where's the rest of the money? Mm-hmm. Where is it going? They sign these bills making you think that this money is going to you. It's not. They are stealing from the American people. And it's, you look at your congressman, whoever it is that you guys sent down, you know, sent down to D.C., and you realize that they're all just puppets. I feel like we're watching a performance, you know, and who can say the most outrageous thing? You know, the Republicans don't want to sign this because they want, you know, slavery and they want you back in chains. You know, the Democrats don't want to sign this because they want grandma to die. Whatever it is, you're watching just it, to me, it's a play.
That's why I don't think that's why I think if you're Black, you shouldn't be beholden to any political party. Democrat or Republican.
Right. I mean, I think that any concept of saying that I am a Republican forever, a Democrat forever is a nonsense. You know, you should always look at the candidates that are running, and any person that is running saying that they want to grow government is your enemy.
Why do you think people give you a lot of backlash for questioning people and having questions? I see all the time with Charlemagne, if we question something that Kamala Harris did or question something that Joe Biden did or question somebody that's Democrat did, why do you think our people have so much backlash when you ask so many questions?
Well, because I think that they don't realize that they've been manipulated against their own interests. And a lot of it is, you know, when you start telling the truth, you become a problem to the establishment, right? So if you're the military industrial complex and you want people to just kind of sleepwalk into another war, and I'm sitting here telling you that, you know, Pentagon just can't keep finding the trillions of dollars that they send overseas. They've got this budget and they're sending all this money to Ukraine. And then they say, oh, we don't know where all the money went. It's being laundered and it's being sent back to a very small group of powerful people. And so when you have someone like me who's cutting through all of the emotional arguments, you have to turn that person into persona non grata, right? And what better way to do it than to have their own community attacking them and saying that they're, you know, pro-white or anti-Black. I mean, it's a nonsense things that they say about me. If you listen to what I'm actually saying, I'm sitting here providing a blueprint for Black Americans to get ahead because it's time, okay? It's time. We've been doing this for a very long time in this country. Black America, wake up, okay? They don't like you. They don't like us, okay? There's
so you're not anti-Black.
America government. America.
Yeah, like the government, the American government. Why would you think the American government wants to help you? At what point in history has that proven to be right? And I'll challenge that and I'll make it wider to all Americans. When has it ever been the circumstance that you felt that the government really just was out for your own best interests? Think of them as a corporation. They want to grow themselves. They want new departments, bigger departments, larger budgets like any other corporation would want. And they never want to leave D.C. because we don't have term limits, which we should have, right? If we had term limits and said you can only serve for 4 years, well, then guess what they would be doing for those 4 years? Trying to shrink government because they'd have to come back out and be us, right? Mm-hmm. When you look at the way that your tax dollars are being spent, you should be outraged. You should be angry. But stop thinking that the enemy is, you know, they constantly have us arguing against each other, women versus men, Black versus white, you know. It's a nonsense. The reason why they want us constantly warring is because it distracts from all of us coming together and taking a look at who the real criminals are. And the real criminals are this small group, this small cadre of powerful people that I think we're virtually all still on a plantation. They just made it look nice. You know, you got a nice chair. We got nice chairs here. Mm-hmm. But I think we're all still on a plantation.
Shut up. That's a baby shower. So is this the reason why I haven't really heard you pushing people to vote for any particular candidate? Just go around?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm very clear about the fact I let everything play out, but I absolutely love Vivek Ramaswamy. Obviously, he's not running anymore, but his ideas and his laser sharp focus on what the actual issues were, I thought he was absolutely brilliant. I'm obviously voting for Trump. You know, we were all doing better under Trump. It's that simple. I don't care what else they have to say, the libels, the smears, I get it. You do it to me. So I just don't even pay attention. I actually find it to be quite boring now, you know?
Economically, what were the reasons? Because, you know, you said that, you didn't like that Republicans were giving out money during 2020.
Both, yeah, both. They were just giving out money during COVID. It was crazy.
But that's what a lot of people loved. They loved the stimulus checks. They loved the PPP. So when you say you were doing better under Trump, that's what people point to. But look at the circumstances it took for that to happen. We don't want to have to go through another pandemic in order to get that money.
Yeah, but the point is that should provide to you a lesson in how the government works because people weren't even thinking ahead. You're like, yeah, I'm getting this free check. So I'm not going to work. Again, incentivizing poor behavior. What ended up happening was a lot of the mom and pop stores closed, right? A lot of businesses actually had to fold because they couldn't sustain it under the economic environment. They just couldn't thrive. People did, literally, employees did not want to go to work. It was crazy. Mm. And so what ends up happening is the individuals get weaker and the corporations got bigger, right? Only the corporations could have survived in that environment, which is what unfortunately ended up happening. And then we put our own selves on the hook to be taxed into oblivion, to keep paying into this ridiculous thing that we agreed to pay into. It would have been much better for us to instead say, I'm happy to work. I don't want your small check. I want you to stop taking tax dollars from me. You know, shrink government, don't make it bigger. That always has to be the economic narrative. If you want to make government bigger, you are taking from me. Government does not make money. We make money, right? Government can only take money. So when you're advocating for more government solutions, you are literally advocating for the government to come into your check and take more money from you.
Lord, that makes sense. How were people better under Trump, though? What are some things that you can point to?
Well, I mean, like I said, common sense, everybody was living better under Trump, but just in terms of the environment for people that were entrepreneurial, definitively one of the first things he did was he started slashing regulations, like, you know, slashing these barriers that prevent people who want to go into business from starting a business because they learn that there's all of these government agencies that are, you got to get this in place, you got to get this in place, you have to get, you know, this license. That's government agencies that are actually standing between you and starting a company. And so on his very first day, he was just like cutting regulations left and right, saying throw this one out, which freed up the markets. At the end of the day, what I am is I'm a free market capitalist. Free the markets, allow people to compete fairly, stop allowing the government to stop people or, you know, de-incentivize them from creating new jobs. I'll give you an example. A cousin of mine wanted to start a food truck. Great. Awesome. Love for you to do that. And he looked into like how many certifications and barriers there were before he could actually start the food truck. Mm-hmm. That is the government growing powerful. Essentially, you have to have money or you have to know somebody to play the game for you to be able to start from nothing and make something of yourself. Economic mobility is really what it's about. So, I mean, that was one of the things that I loved the most about Trump is that he was very sensible. He has a very good business head. He understands the business environment. And every person should want to, you know, should be aspiring not to work for a bunch of people that don't have your best interests, but to be able to.
I agree with that, but so many of his businesses have failed, though.
Yeah, but even failing is a part of the entrepreneur. Things that I've tried to do have failed, right? And I don't ever let that be a barrier. Like, I think that there's always this psychological mindset of people that are fearful to fail. That's the best way for things to happen because you learn so much in failure. Mm-hmm. And people always want to point to and mock somebody for failing. Like, oh, she tried to do this and then she failed. Well, at least she tried, right? What are you doing?
And everybody and has losses. Everybody
and you learn from them. You grow from those losses, you know? And that's another, that's the thing that really bothers me too is like that psychological conditioning of like, well, what's the point in trying because you might fail? It's like, no, you should try and you might fail. And then you'll learn. And the next time you try, you might make something of yourself.
We see that in the cannabis industry where it costs so much to even get in the industry, why you see not a lot of minorities in the cannabis industry. But I want to talk about the business that you tried to open that you couldn't get because there was so many regulations against you. I thought it would have been a great business. Now, that's the one where you can actually find out the person trolling you or talking shit about you online, talking fake news, and you could actually find who they were.
No. So that was actually, this was crazy. So I actually never got to start the business that I wanted to do. I wanted to create an app called Social Autopsy and I wanted to create it. It was actually really misguided, but it was because of what happened to me in high school. Like I thought that it was really harsh that those kids, some of them were really young, ended up getting arrested because their names got publicized and, you know, they got arrested for a hate crime. And it ended up ruining a lot of those kids' lives. Like, a lot of them had suicide attempts. I heard that one of them ended up changing their names. It's just a little too young for us to be smearing and libeling people. Kids are dumb. We all got the ability to be able to grow up and be stupid and say dumb stuff without social media, which is, like, I think that was, like, glory for us because I can't imagine if, like, things that I thought in the middle school were on Twitter and people could pull it up and be like, you are not allowed to have a life.
Right. Speak for yourself. Men mature slower than everybody else. That's true. It took me a while. Some of mine's still on the internet.
Okay. I think it's unfair, and I think that a lot of times we're all talking from this castle of like, oh, these kids are horrible people because he said whatever when he was 12 or 13. It's like you don't have to live through what those kids are living through with social media. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to create this app that would help them because rather than them having to get like arrested for saying something, like there could maybe be like a school could, you know, make it a part of their academic record or something else. It was extremely misguided, but my heart was in the right place. But before I could even launch it, I put up a Kickstarter because I didn't have money to fund it. The Kickstarter got taken down because they said that this would be doxing. And it was actually a really wild situation. But yeah, it was just I was kickstarting a fund for it. But I'm glad it didn't take off, because now I realize why people think that it would have been really bad for free speech if that had happened.
Why?
Well, they think, you know, now when you look at this environment and see how people are treated when they say one thing 10 years ago, could you imagine if there was a whole app that had that? It would have been used for evil. It really would have been used for evil.
Now, I want to go back to something you said earlier, because I know a lot of people will hear you say, well, Candace, you're speaking a lot about, you know, the black family, but then you married a white man.
Yeah.
Umar would have a huge problem with that.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Dr. Umar?
I have heard of him. I have not listened to him, I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. What is his argument, actually, if you could just repurpose his argument
He feels that,
everything,
you know,
black.
No.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Everything.
No, he feels black men should be with black women, because when you're talking about it from an economic standpoint, you want to grow the wealth as a black family.
But that doesn't...
And if you marry somebody from another race, then, you know, your wealth will be with that person, and he doesn't like that.
Okay. I would love to talk to him more about that, because, I mean, it's always very interesting to me to hear this paradox of black people who will make an argument that, you know, the system is racist, and then also make an argument like this, which is essentially making an argument for the Supreme Court to revisit Virginia versus Love and basically say that black Americans and white Americans shouldn't be marrying. I think the greatest thing ever is when people come together on the basis of who they love and get married. You know, for me personally, I never thought of my husband as a race. It's just very interesting to me that see people go, she's married to a white man. I look at my kids, I'm not like, oh, my kids are mixed. I married the person that it made the most sense for me to marry. I have a mind that is just, you know, if you even knew half the things that I'm thinking about, the stuff that I'm reading, just go all the time. It was difficult for me to find a partner that was a challenge to me, you know, the challenge that I needed, whether you want to say like an academic challenge, whatever it is, with my same interests. Mm-hmm. It just was. What you will know, a lot of times people think that when people come together, it's because of how they look. Actually, I actually read this in a Thomas Sowell book, or maybe it was a Shelby Steele book. People tend to marry their IQ, which is interesting. Mm. You think like if you see two black people together, oh, it's because they are two black people, but actually they are probably better matched based on their IQ. You know, I fell in love with my husband just because I think he is one of the most brilliant people ever. You know, I love him very much. The stuff that we talk about, I'm like, there is no other person that I could have married. We have three beautiful children who are growing up in an environment that I am just so happy that I was able to, you know, what every parent wants, to give your children better than you had, you know? And that's all I can say. I'm just the luckiest person in the entire world.
How are you going to feel about you not finding him attractive and disliking him for his mind?
My God. What?
He got the smear already ready for the journalists that are listening. Candace says her husband is not. It was a bonus that I also think that he's beautiful and gorgeous and handsome, but it really was about his mind, you know, his ability to just dive into any subject and comprehend it, you know, in a, just any subject. I mean, whether you're talking about mathematics, economics, politics, he could read a book on chemistry, read a book on building houses, and he just comprehends the concept very quickly. So I know I married the right person, and I want every person to never allow like race to be a barrier to you finding love. That is so foolish. That will stop you. And by the way, you know, there has been so much toxicity, and particularly in black relationships, because of the media portraying black men as this or black women as this. And we just have to stop doing that, you know?
Yeah. Have you ever dated black men before?
Yeah, I dated black men, which is another thing that I always find really funny, because the media tries to portray me as someone who only liked white guys. Mm. Actually, if you want to be honest, I started off on a really strong Asian kick in my life.
Oh my gosh.
I thought I was going to marry an Asian man.
It was fine.
I did. My first boyfriend was Japanese. My second boyfriend was Korean. I just really loved Asian men. It was weird.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Wow. In Stanford, Connecticut, there was an Asian population in Stanford, Connecticut?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's Asian population everywhere.
I don't know. Was there a higher one in Stanford, Connecticut?
No, I think I just pursued Asian men. I don't know. I just liked Asian guys.
Yeah. Candace Owens fetishizes Asian men.
Oh, my gosh. Stop painting the headlines so they can grab it. What is wrong with you?
What do you think is the biggest misconception of Candace Owens?
I think the thing that I hate the most is the media makes it seem like I'm so angry all the time. That stereotype is crazy. I have such a good sense of humor, and I always have so much fun. Genuinely, I'm having so much fun on my show, on my podcast. I think that the worst stereotype is they have me as somebody that's like angry and hardened, because they're always pulling out just one excerpt of something that I've said. And I really, I don't like that because I have just a great sense of humor. Yeah. I laugh, even when they get me good. Like if they do something and they say something that I'm like, actually, I hate this person, but that's kind of funny. Like I do look like that. Mm. I'll laugh. Yeah.
I saw that when Chappelle said what he said.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, I'm like, listen, Dave Chappelle, I didn't even think he was actually that funny in that skit. Of all the Chappelle skits that, you know, mm-hmm. exist, I didn't think he was that funny. I think he was really angry throughout that skit. But also, it's Dave Chappelle. You know what I mean? It's Dave mm-hmm. Chappelle, and he knows my name, and he knows who I am. And I think that you need comedians. It's a protected space, and even if they're making fun of people, as soon as we start killing the jokers, you know, we're no longer living in a society that we want to be in. Trust me, when the kings start killing the jokers, it's not good. And I love Dave Chappelle. I grew up on Dave Chappelle. I was genuinely honored that he even knew my name. I was
what,
just like,
what
did
you
cool.
say? It didn't make you, feel no type of way. He called you the most articulate idiot he's ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was funny. I thought it was insulting, but I wanted to make a larger statement that we need the comedians. You know what I mean? And even though I particularly did not find it funny, I just thought it was an important to just kind of rise above it, you know? And yeah, it was offensive. Yes, he definitely intended it for it to be offensive. But at the end of the day, I didn't really think it was an opportunity to be like, what was I going to say? Cancel Dave Chappelle. You know, it's Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
Now you accused T.I. of performing earlier, but you know, you got a platform too.
Mm-hmm.
So do you find yourself performing at times?
I'm genuine. So there's never going to be a person that comes onto my show or a person that I've talked to that is going to be like, Candace then flipped up, you know, when the cameras were on and started saying things that she didn't say to me privately. That's what I mean about a performance.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you do that? You and I had spoken on the phone multiple times. I know what you think. I know that you veer conservative. So what was that? Actually, what was that? No, for me, I actually say what I believe. You know, I actually believe the things that I'm saying. And people just find that to be incredulous. How could a black person not be a Democrat? How could she not honor Lyndon Baines Johnson's dream to have, you know, those N-words voting Democrat for the next 200 years? Because I learned my history properly after I left school. You know, because now I see that the people that I thought were my saviors are actually avowed racists. And what they really wanted to do was just to recreate the slave plantation. And when I see people like T.I., it gets me angry. It does. Mm-hmm. People should be angry. People should now be questioning full stop, especially after the Diddy lawsuit, like what's real and what's not. Who's being blackmailed? You know, who maybe, you know, is being controlled by certain people? I don't know. These are questions that I think people are ready to start asking, but I definitely have a huge question mark on T.I.
You mentioned the Diddy lawsuit. Yeah, you mentioned the Diddy lawsuit twice with T.I.
What's up with the Diddy lawsuit?
What do you mean, what's up? You guys have definitely covered it, right?
Absolutely.
It's crazy.
Absolutely.
You know, it suggests that he was the Jeffrey Epstein of Hollywood, that there's a blackmail ring, that people are being given drugs, they're doing things while they're drugged, and then those people are controlled, right? Because if you're a rapper and your brand is hardcore and I have a video of you kissing a guy and I'm like, I'll release it unless you say or do or take this position, that's a blackmail ring, right? So
T.I. wasn't in there though.
No, he wasn't. I'm just saying that the Diddy mm-hmm. lawsuit kind mm-hmm. of led me to ask some larger questions about, okay, because I have been feeling like in my heart that something weird's going on with black media. You know, I'm mm-hmm. like, what is this trash that we're trying to sell as good music? This isn't black culture. I hate that black people even call it black culture, because that's like, no, vultures came in and took black culture, turned it into something else. Like I said, I've said it many times.
We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the 5-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date,
Participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey everyone, I am so excited. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with a Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You won't want to miss this because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill of your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast festival for more details.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training, and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
I grew up listening to Lauryn Hill. Stop trying to tell me this is Black culture. Like, I grew up in my grandfather's house listening to The Temptations. Stop trying to tell me that this is Black culture. It's not. This is
rotten. Well, Black people are monolithic. I mean, you're an example of that.
No, I'm not saying we're a monolith. I'm just saying that Black people create magic when they want to, okay? There's no singer that is better than a Black singer. If you want to go tit for tat, give me the best, you know, white singer versus the best Black singer. Like, we have unbelievable talent, right? So if you're going to tell me that what we are now making mainstream is the filth that I hear today, I'm going to start asking questions about who's condoning this, who's signing these people.
But music is an algorithm, right? And what they really do is they see what music is being hit on Shazam or what people are quote unquote liking, and that's what they play
true.
More.
It's getting artificial. That's it's what starting they, to get artificial. Quote unquote, say. No, and I think that's why, like, you know, I do love Kanye because I think he was pointing to this stuff really early. Like when he jumped on stage and grabbed a trophy from Taylor Swift, mm-hmm. people were mad. I was mad. I remember being like, "What on earth is he doing?" But what was he actually telling you? That all of this is a performance, right? Like this is not based on merit anymore. And by the way, he was factually right. The Taylor Swift video was like a girl dancing in a mirror, and Beyonce put out Single Ladies, one of the greatest music videos of all time, and they gave it to Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. There's a narrative. There's a person that they're trying to make big whenever they make these decisions. Also clarified by the Diddy lawsuit, because the person alleges, I'll say allegedly, that, you know, Diddy told him if he did this or that, that he would get producer of the year. Well, how could Diddy make that decision? How could Diddy offer that to somebody full stop? You know, this means that there's a different reason that people are getting awarded and are being platformed. And I have seen people that I just do not believe were made hot by black people that were suddenly being thrown in our face and being invited everywhere on bright carpets, and suddenly they're, you know, next Taylor Swift. It all just feels so artificial. I'm giving an example. You guys talked on stage about Ice Spice. I mean, on the show about Ice Spice, you guys played my clip where I was talking about it. I don't have anything against Ice Spice. I'm sure she's a very nice girl. I really am sure. She's young. You know, that's not a justification. What is she, 20? How old is she, 20?
I think she's like 24, 25.
Yeah, she's not that young. Right? You know, like Lauryn Hill. She was like 18 when she was on Sister Act. But, you know, the point is I don't fault her for making that music, but I am seeing this artificial promotion of Ice Spice. Like, all of a sudden, of all the people, that's who Taylor Swift decided to put on her on the stage and take to, you know, the Super Bowl. I have questions, you know? I just have questions. And I do think that Kanye was trying to say something, you know, in that moment when he took the trophy from her.
Mm-hmm. But when you listen to Lauryn Hill, you know, there were other music there that wasn't like Lauryn Hill music.
There was Lil Kim.
It was the minority.
It was Trina.
I think Lauryn's a little before the Trina. Mm-hmm. But what I will say, it was a minority of the music, and now it's the majority. And I would be okay with music like that if the majority of black music was based on what we can actually create and our talent. Because like I said, we have a ton of talent. I tend to think that when we get involved in certain things, we just do it better. I think creatively, black people are very gifted. Mm-hmm. And where somebody is making our gift a curse, right? It's encouraging, it's music that's encouraging black men to commit crimes. It's like a hip-hop to prison pipeline. And I just, you know, I really question it.
How do you feel when Meek Mill says he listens to you all the time? Because I've just thought about that when you were talking about the music that they make. He actually listens to you all the time. Did you see that tweet?
I did see that, and I reached out to him, and we had a private discussion very quickly, but it was so interesting because just based on that tweet, how quickly they tried to make sure that me and Meek Mill wouldn't talk, right? Media instantly. This is what Candace has said in the past about, you know, Meek Mill being arrested. Just, again, constantly trying to fracture black relationships, and that has always been the name of the game from politics to the media. They are interested in the business of fracturing black relationships if it's a relationship that I think they believe could advance black America. So I'm just like, when is there going to be that moment that black America is really just going to fully awaken, you know, and have our moment, like have our enlightenment in this country, because we've never been allowed to have it. And I think that there are people that genuinely hate black Americans. And I think sometimes people pretend to be the friends of black Americans. And they're just not. They're not our friends.
You call Fannie Willis a ghetto superstar.
Yeah, Maya's song was great.
Why is Fannie Willis a ghetto superstar?
Come on, did you watch that freaking ridiculous court? Did you watch that court? Mm-hmm. It was wild. It was just like, it just gave me the Maya song. Like, I thought she was fabulous. I was like, this is so entertaining. Like I said on my show, they should put her on Love and Hip Hop. I was entertained. I was entertained by Fannie Willis, but she has no business being a district attorney. And maybe we should listen to all the black men in Fulton County who have been saying, you know, they all lined up in the streets and were like, Trump, 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 Trump. And when they interviewed them, the black guys were saying, because we've been saying forever in Fulton County that these charges are all trumped up and ridiculous. And now for the first time, people are going to pay attention to it because it hit the president. And they were right, obviously. I was only watching this court case because it had to do with Trump. And it was crazy. Like, somebody that corrupt should never be in a position of power.
Yeah.
But she is a superstar.
I wonder if she should step down because it is a distraction. You know what I mean? Like, people should be focused on the fact that Donald Trump, you know, attempted to overturn the results of an election in Georgia. Like, that's what the trial should be about. But as long as Fannie Willis is on the case, I think they'll constantly make it about that.
Yeah.
And by the way, let's just say he's on trial for that. So he's innocent until proven guilty. Right. But you can't even really have the conversation about that because everybody will be still focused on Fannie.
Yeah, and the thing is now they believe that what she did was just corrupt full stop, right? Mm-hmm. That she's not a person that is clean here. She's obviously corruptible. You know, she's been having this relationship, taking taxpayer dollars, you know, allegedly taking taxpayer dollars based on the testimony and using it to fund her and her boyfriend's lifestyle.
They did find out that they said that wasn't true. Money part.
They said it on the stand. Mm-hmm. So that's why they're saying that, like, this lawsuit will lead to more lawsuits. I mean, this trial will lead to more trials, rather, because she said it on the stand. I pulled a clip of her saying that she takes out cash and some of the cash is from when she was campaigning. I mean, she implicated herself in some other severe crimes while she was on the stand.
And that's why I think it's going to constantly be a distraction. That's why I think she should just step away from the case altogether.
I agree. But they are saying she's not going to, so it's just going to be more of a show.
Now, you said you don't perform, but you said you would put your entire professional reputation on the line that First Lady Bridgette Macron is in fact a man.
Guys,
How do you prove that?
I am so happy that you asked me this question because to me, this is the wildest thing that I've ever looked into. No, this is crazy. This is absolutely crazy. You absolutely must go watch my episodes on this because I'm telling you, I'm not the person that back when they were saying Michelle Obama was a dude, whatever, you know, where is Obama from? I'm not a person that's just going to jump on that and say things that are ridiculous. This was so crazy that I figured this was going to be so easy to debunk. Like, I looked into this and I'm like, what is this case that's happening in France? The French people are all oppressed saying that they're being, you know, everybody's lying. I looked into it, blew my mind. Absolutely blew my mind. First off, let me ask you a question. If I say right now, I'm like, you were born a man. You lived for the first 30 years of your life as a man. What is the first thing you would do?
I would want to fight you.
What? And then after that, let's say you're the president of France. After that.
If you...
Yeah, but I'm like 100%. She lived as a man. Like, she didn't exist until she was 30. What would you do?
I would be upset. I mean, I would be angry. I would be upset.
Yeah. What do you want her to do? Show you her genitals?
No,
genital?
I'm just saying. No.
Vagina? I don't know.
It's the easiest thing to debunk. You just, like, a classmate, a yearbook.
Oh, so your birth certificate all, yeah. So
not
yeah.
even a birth certificate. Oh, I mean, like...
I would just ignore it.
No way. If I'm the president, like she said, if I'm the president. Yeah, I'm providing some type of credential. Like, nah.
30 years of your life. Okay, 30 years of your life. Instead, what this president did, what this president and his wife did, was first sent the police to try to intimidate the journalists as they were working on this case. They worked on this case for 3 years. These were journalists. This wasn't some like random Reddit conspiracy theory. And that you know, Brigitte Macron was a transsexual. And they sent the police, took their phones, wanted to know who else was working on the story. You don't do that. You don't do that. It's so easy. Mm-hmm. I would literally just be like, here's a photo of every year of my life. I would expect classmates to be like, I went to school with her, high school with her, graduated with her. Here she is. Nothing. Just intimidating the journalists. Journalists drop the stories anyway. Then the Brigitte Macron sues them for invasion of privacy. You guys are doing way too much. Produce one photo. You allege that you had 3 kids and 30 years of living. To the contrary, tons of photos of Jean-Michel, who she alleges is her brother. Oh, okay, where's your brother then? Go for a walk with your brother. Debunk the rumors. Just go walk 10 feet with Jean-Michel. No, because you are Jean-Michel Trogneau. The journalists were absolutely right. They did an incredible job of a long series, Fait documents. I had to like download it and put it in English, and I was like, this is wild. I mean, they have photos of Jean-Michel Trogneau. They look like twins. It's obviously Brigitte, you know.
Where's the brother then?
Exactly. Now you're asking the right questions.
Kate Middleton hiding out together?
Don't edit my story.
It's been going on for years in France. I covered this. The French people were going crazy. They were like, thank you so much. We've been gaslit by the media. It takes 5 seconds to walk with your brother. That's just what I would do. I would walk up with my brother, and then I would give a speech, press conference. I'd be like, and this is the danger of conspiracy theories. This is my brother. It is ridiculous. This is being pushed by far right. Nothing. They've just been trying to silence people, intimidation and tactics. They even tried to sell to the press a fake photo, which got debunked. It was actually Jean-Michel's daughter saying that this was Jean-Michel. They turned it into black and white and tried to pretend that was a photo. You're now sharing fake photos trying to get away with this. I'm telling you guys, look into the case. It is wild. Jean-Michel Trogneau is now Brigitte Macron, transitioned at the age of 30. By the way, alone, that whole story of Emmanuel Macron was like 30 years older. That already we're in pedophile territory. So everything about that story has been sick from the beginning.
Well, the age in France, I agree with you on that. But the age in France, I think the legal age is 15, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, in different interviews, they said 14. He was 13. It's something not right there in that entire situation. And yeah, I'm telling you, look into it. It's a wild story.
Now, why do you believe that Hollywood was created by the CIA?
Well, before we say Hollywood was created by the CIA, I guess I should clarify because, you know, first off, you guys do know that the Pentagon has a budget for film. Like, there's a whole department in the Pentagon.
I know that.
That's a fact. There you go. That's all you need to know. There's an entire department in the Pentagon. They get involved with films, and they get involved with films for the purpose of propaganda. They always have.
What movies have
I should have said Pentagon instead of CIA. Tons of them. I should show you the list. You should pull it up. It's wild. Absolutely, yeah, Pentagon please. Department for Hollywood. Tons of them.
I have to
Even Transformers.
This.
Even Transformers, like, you know, because they're concerned about certain narratives. They get involved with, like, World War films, like, how are we telling a story about history? Usually it's because we're lying about what we did or trying not to make Americans aware of the crimes against humanity that we commit overseas, you know?
Yeah, the Pentagon has funded some films, Black Hawk Down, Red Dawn, GoldenEye.
The more you know. So now you understand your experience in theaters is what your government wants you to think. They want you to think that this is how things happen, and it's usually not at all how things have actually happened.
Six of the best movies made with help from the Department of Defense. This is military. Yeah.
I shouldn't have said CIA. I should have just said the government. But
Top Gun.
Yeah.
Red Dawn, Apollo 13.
Mm-hmm. It's all about
Iron Man.
Oh, my.
I didn't know that was on the list.
Now he upset. Wow. Now he upset.
Let me ask, interesting.
Now you said.
But talking about, continue.
What? Iron Man? Nah, that's her limit right there. She was like, you know what? Now it's crazy.
What is the point of that? Just control?
Yeah, propaganda. It's crazy. You grow up in school and you think propaganda belongs to the East or something. Mm-hmm. Propaganda is the name of the game of our government. They, again, never want you to look into the crimes that they are committing, so they're constantly trying to sell themselves as the good guys. They did the most. They rescued and saved the world. They've never done anything bad overseas. If you are living and you believe that the American government hasn't committed crimes against humanity, you had to wake up from the propaganda. You got to learn real history, not what was taught to you in a textbook. That's all just propaganda, you know? We've done horrific things.
You mentioned Kanye put you on the phone with T.I. and some other people. What's your relationship with Kanye? Because I know one time y'all were going to do a business with each other, and then that just fizzled out.
Yeah, you know, I was under so much pressure. It was actually insane to say horrific things about Kanye when all that stuff started going down. Was it 2 years ago now? Mm-hmm. And the truth is my relationship with Kanye began long before I ever even met Kanye. I really do credit the creation of, like, my spirit and my character with listening to his music and having the courage to step out of the bounds of what people say that you are allowed to be. And, like, his song Power, I played that so many times when I got into politics, just realizing that I was going to take a lot of bullets. People were going to say a lot of things about me, but really the power is within me to just not care. And that is why I think that a lot of people don't understand, like, what Kanye means, I think, to the Black community. And that's why the media couldn't take him down, because the media didn't create Kanye. That's the truth. They didn't create him. And so I will forever defend what Kanye has meant to so many people who grew up on his music and listen to his music, like, the just knowing that you can, that you have it within yourself and you have the power within yourself to be something. You know, he's obviously still creating music, still loved very much. Do I agree with everything that Kanye does? No. I don't even think Kanye agrees with all the stuff that Kanye does.
He performs a lot.
Yeah.
Performs a lot. He throws you under the bus when he needs to, though.
Like, me?
Yeah, it
what
feels
do you say
like
about
that.
Me?
It just feels like he's quick to distance himself from you at certain points.
You know, I think that a lot of the way the, like, what do you mean by that, I guess?
I think about one moment in particular when everybody got mad at him. It was, I don't know if it was you, it was something you designed. It was the Blexit shirts or something, and you said he designed them, and he was like, no, I didn't.
Yeah, so I think that actually time has been good with that situation, because I couldn't say a lot, and people thought that I was, like, lying. Like, Candace lied. First off, I never said that Kanye designed the T-shirts, ever. I said that he designed the logo, and Kanye did design the logo.
Oh,
he had helped us, like, you know, I have photos of it. Like, but at that time, Kanye was going through a lot personally. And I just didn't think, I just decided that I was just going to be the bigger person. I could have clarified it in the media, but I just allowed everyone to call me a liar because, like I said, I'm, like, a fiercely loyal person. And because I knew of a lot of stuff that was going on personally with him, I just didn't want to add to the avalanche, you know, of people criticizing him. But again, I never had said that Kanye designed the T-shirts, but he did help us with the logo.
And why troll people? Like, when y'all wore the White Lives Matter shirts?
No, because white lives do matter. And the point wasn't to troll people. It was actually to make a statement, you know, and that's that. First off, Kanye was behind that, but he's an artist, and there's a point that he's always making it. You don't think he did this to troll. Like, it's just, that seems very beneath him. I'm just doing this to troll.
I don't know. Dame Dash is this guy, and Dame Dash even said that's what he does. He trolls. But you can, it's obvious he trolls.
I didn't consider that as trolling. I definitely don't think that he would have put trolling as a part of his fashion show. He takes his fashion pretty seriously. You know,
he's the type of person that will say one thing in private and then publicly do a whole about face on it.
Has he done that with you?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
A bunch of times.
Like on what topic? Because I've never, like, on stuff that he says that he believes, I've never seen him flip on a topic. Like,
no, I've seen him flip quite often.
On his positions?
Yes, absolutely.
That's interesting.
Absolutely.
Well, I can't tell you it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, but regarding the White Lives Matter shirts, you know, BLM, I said from the very beginning, was going to be bad. That's another one that people are saying, like, oh, Candace did say this. I'm like, yeah, I did, man, because obviously it was going to be another money laundering situation. Crazy $90 million raised in no time in a couple of months, and all that money went to trans organizations. Wild. Absolutely crazy. Establishing the first trans neighborhood in San Francisco. Crazy. But it was obvious. It was obvious because wherever there is tons of black emotion, there is a money laundering operation that's about to get off the ground. And whenever there is, like, worldwide media support, why do black Americans think the media support them? As soon as you got tricked by thinking that the media was on your side, it should have been a wake-up call. It went way too global, way too fast. Corporations suddenly, yes, we believe in this. And I knew that the end result was going to be that black American communities were going to be looted and rioted to the ground, you know, and that they were training black Americans psychologically to believe that this was it. This was going to be what, you know, the advancement. This is going to be good for your cause. Get behind this organization that's ultimately going to hurt you and set you back, which is what happened. Businesses moved out of black communities because why would you continue running a business if you're getting robbed and stolen from every 5 minutes? And now those communities are poorer, and now you have Rashida Tlaib saying, oh, Walgreens is racist because they are leaving, you know, inner city communities. What would you like Walgreens to do? This is a for-profit business. So it incentivized bad behavior in the black community, made businesses move out, and money laundered to a bunch of LGBTQIA, however many letters it's gotten to, organizations, which I also think is not good for the black community.
Have you had any conversations with anybody from BLM? Like, have they ever challenged you on?
Well, you know, I went to Patrice's house.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
I was very pregnant. She lied. Caught her in real time lying. Right? I was very polite when I rang the doorbell. I went to one of her houses. She's got a lot of houses. Thanks, BLM. but yeah, I had on Hawk Newsom, who was the New York chairman for BLM. Mm-hmm. Had him on my show several times, actually. I had him on 3 times, I believe. And debated him and his ideas during that. I'm not a person that is scared to debate anybody on any topic because it's what I actually believe. I think people that run away from debates are the liars, right? Like, if you're going to sit and talk about somebody and say they think, sit down and have a debate about it, about a topic. BLM, I caught all the heat, but fortunately that's $100 million just burned and gone and there to support trans issues if that's what black America agrees with.
I agree with that even when it comes to people that you may disagree with. Like, you know, people may disagree with Candace Owens. They may disagree with, you know, Fox News. If I'm these elected officials or these people that are being spoken about, I'm going to go on y'all platforms and talk to y'all because y'all have huge platforms.
Right.
So why continue to let somebody say some things that you say aren't true or say some things that you disagree with and let those things go unchallenged? Go have the conversation with them.
Right, exactly. And so I think that's part of it is that we've been so boxed in and you're only hearing liberal ideas and liberal concepts. And by the way, I do want to say half the narratives. When I say that, like, I suddenly realized I was always a conservative, I think that actually would happen if black Americans actually paid attention to conservative arguments, because I don't take the black community as woke liberal. It's just not that. I think something, like, especially on the LGBTQ stuff, like, is this what black Americans care about? Like, bathroom signs and wanting kids to pick their gender? I would definitely say no. No. So it's just being forced. Yeah. This narrative is being forced. And I cannot stand. Nothing makes me angrier than seeing the intentional feminization of black men. Drives me insane.
Expound.
Kid Cudi wearing a dress. Like, suddenly, and there is actually an old interview that I believe Dave Chappelle gave to Oprah where he talks about that in Hollywood, there's always this, like, pressure for them to try to get black men to wear dresses. And he, like, said no to this. And people kept trying to get him to wear a dress. And like, wouldn't it be so funny in one of your skits if you wore it? And he was like, no, what is this? Like, why are you trying to get me to wear a dress? That is weird to me. It's super toxic. And I, for some reason, when I see that, like, the hyper-feminization of black men, it does something to me spiritually. Like, it makes me want to snap.
Mm. Well, I guess I'm not saying you're wrong, but you know, there's plenty of people that be like, well, why are you not with a black man then, Candace?
Was that has something to do with anyone? I'm of a black man. Like, my granddaddy, my dad, I'm of a black man. It's not going to, like, why do you feel impacted by it? Because I am seeing that intentional attack on black men, and, mm-hmm. and they're trying to condition black men to aspire to that. When you put that on a red carpet and like, oh, look, fame and men wear dresses. What is that? Mm-hmm. Stop selling that to the black community. I don't like that at all.
I love the way that you and Ben Shapiro are able to disagree, but then I guess still have a business relationship, because I saw him recently tell you, I think it was maybe a few months ago, he told you to quit over your Israel coverage, your Palestine-Israel coverage.
Yeah.
What was that about?
Well, he told me, the tweet that he responded to was actually just some biblical passages. Mm-hmm. And he thought that it was me saying that I had to choose money over I don't know how we interpret it, but it was definitely not. I just meant it as like, you know, peace, calling for peace, because, you know, there was a video circulating of him calling me a disgrace or a faux professional or whatever. Yep. It was. And I decided to choose peace. And then when I chose peace, he responded to the peace with not peace.
So why wouldn't he just fire you?
Well, as I explained on Tucker Carlson's show, like, Ben doesn't have the power to fire me. And it's not even saying that we disagree on Israel and Palestine. I just think that he's obviously, his wife is Israeli. Mm-hmm. He spends a lot of time in Israel throughout the year. I think when you have an emotional attachment to some place, that sometimes your reaction to anything is going to be more extreme to it. You know, I have some relatives that are from St. Thomas. If what was happening in that region was happening in St. Thomas, I would probably be the most fired up out of everybody at the Daily mm-hmm. Wire. And yeah, he definitely went through, I think, an emotional time at the end of last year, you know, dealing with everything. I think I was pretty even keel. I don't want to see innocent Palestinians killed. I don't want to see innocent Israelis killed. Mm-hmm. I never want to see children killed. Mm-hmm. I don't believe children should have to grow up in a war zone based on the actions of a few. And that, I guess, last year sounded crazy. It sounded crazy because always the demand in all these situations is to make people pick a side. And then if you don't pick their side, then you get smeared and you get libeled, right? So if you don't say, I want every Palestinian murdered, then suddenly you're pro-Hamas. If you don't say, like, I want every Israeli person eradicated, you know, then suddenly you're pro-apartheid, you know, whatever the arguments are. And I think both of that is extreme.
You said no government anywhere has a right to commit a genocide, ever. There's no justification for genocide.
Yeah. That is going to age so well. Mm-hmm. Genocide is always wrong. It is, guys. Mm-hmm. It is always wrong. And doesn't matter at any point in human history, any person that is advocating for genocide is always in the wrong. And when I wrote that tweet, I was referring to Brian Mast, who was a congressman. He got up and he literally said in Congress that there's no such thing as an innocent Palestinian. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that is genocidal. Right. As soon as you say an entire group of people are all evil, you are now laying the groundwork to justify a genocide. Mm. And that, to me, was wild. So I spoke up against it.
Have you been blackballed from Fox News?
No. I just stopped going on Fox. I used to, you know, my schedule is very busy, but I used to go only once a week on the Tucker Carlson show. Mm. And then Tucker left Fox News. Mm. So I just didn't go on Fox News.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You seem to be excited that Black America is embracing you. As you said, why is that?
I'm just glad that they're hearing me for the first time. Mm-hmm. Forget embracing. I just wanted them to actually hear me. There was just so many things said about me that just were not true. And no matter what, every time an article was written, they would just rehash the things that I never said. I mean, even the Joe Budden interview that was recently dropped and everyone's talking about it, go read Hot New Hip Hop's article on it. It's wild. It's just not what was said at all in that interview. It's just patching together things to make me seem like I'm a monster. Like, Candace blames the education system for, like, Ice Spice's music. That's literally what they said. They ran with that. And so I'm just excited that they're at least hearing me. That's the biggest thing. Actually being able to decide, okay, I heard Candace and here's what I think about her. Rather than I heard what somebody else heard and what they say that I should have heard, and here's what I think about her.
Yeah, because most of the hate is like domino. Like, you'll see, like, over the years, I've seen, like, people in comments, it'll be headlines about you, and somebody don't like you because somebody else don't like you, and then because of what somebody else said, and then, oh, she usually just, she ain't never for us, or it's always what somebody is waiting to, like, in the comments, Charlamagne always say, people wait in the comments, go in the comments to
see how they
like,
want
to
feel.
Like, see how people want to feel. Right. Go through comments first so they can tell you how to feel.
Right.
You never did research on her. You've never sat and talked to her. Obviously, you don't watch her show. You just grab what the headlines grab, and you read the comments, and they tell you not to like her.
Right. And a part of that, by the way, has a lot to do with illiteracy, which is something that I talk about all the time, because the illiteracy rate in inner cities right now is over 70%. We're talking about over 70% of black boys that can't pass a basic reading exam. That is crazy. That is crazy. Across the United States entirely, 40%. We're at 40%. No. So people think that they're going to public schools to get an education. It's the exact opposite. They are slowly making sure that you're never going to be able to have a proper education, and they're going to tell you what to think. That's what they want. They want the ability of a headline. And that's very scary. You know, I talk about what they did on slave plantations, you know, why we weren't allowed to learn how to read, because they knew that if they could control the narrative, then you could be enslaved forever, right? Your mind becomes enslaved when you can't read, when you say, okay, I learned that in a textbook, but let me read this, you know, and actually see what I think. And I think that's intentional. I literally believe that there is an evil intent to re-enslave black Americans. And the ability for us not to read, to me, is everybody should be hitting the alarm on that. Like, why aren't black boys learning how to read and yet being encouraged to make music, to follow hip hop, to do this, to do that, you know, follow sports? You know, our culture is very much like go into music or go into sports. Mm-hmm. We need black scholars. We need black people that are actually aware of what has actually happened to black America, what the true story is outside of what these textbooks are trying to sell.
I agree.
It's very scary to me, the illiteracy rate in black America.
No, I agree with that, because a lot of times when, you know, black people see other black people that are successful, they're in music and athletics, so that's what people gravitate towards.
Right, which guarantees them. That's why they turn these people into such idols. It guarantees more black failure, right? Because here's the truth. What is the actual percentage chance that you have of becoming the next LeBron James? 0%. Let me just tell you, 0% that you're going to be the next. But every black kid, because of the way he's hailed as a hero and they put this, is going to try to be the next LeBron James. They're going to think that they have it, right? So they're going to put their academics second and prioritize, you know, my baby's going to be the next LeBron. Okay, but he probably isn't going to be. What is your chance as a black American of becoming a doctor if you stay in school and pass all the tests? 100%.
Mm-hmm. Right? Black doctors, too.
What is Candace Owens' definition of black excellence?
That's a very good question. You know, I think black excellence would just be excellence, period. Because I always try to say the reason why we should remove ourselves from saying white excellence, black excellence, is because I've realized that there's been a power in people trying to segregate our minds in that way. Mm-hmm. You know, excellence to me, I think, is independence. I think it starts with independence of thought, right? Actually challenging yourself and challenging your beliefs and constantly reexamining them, not thinking that you have it figured out. But I think that once we achieve higher education levels, and I'm talking about black people in mathematics, black literacy rate jumping to what it should be, which should be 100% if we're being honest, if you're sending somebody through the public education system, then we will start to see necessarily black people achieving more in our society. So I just personally think that we should be focusing on the black literacy rates, full stop, and also creating our own companies, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And not being... having our voices controlled.
We have a few questions for you. Just a few. Just to.
Where are the questions coming from?
These are black quiz questions.
Where's the black quiz at?
We have our own questions.
Oh, cool.
We came with our own questions.
Oh, okay.
She's like, where are these questions coming from, sir?
So I'm like, are we on Twitter? Or where are we at?
So where did MLK deliver his famous I Have a Dream speech?
Oh, in Washington, D.C.?
Yes. Ding, 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 ding.
Yes.
Okay. And, yeah. How many fights did Will Smith get into before his mom got scared?
Oh, good question.
Candace, come on.
Hold on. She's gonna sing it. West Philadelphia, born and raised. On the playground is where I spend most of my days.
Okay.
Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool and all, shooting some b-ball outside of the school. When a couple of guys, they were up to no good, started making trouble in my neighborhood. I got in one little fight.
Y'all didn't think she knew that one. Y'all didn't think she knew that one.
It was just one. It was a little one.
No, you can't sing the whole song and be like, it was a little one.
But that's how you would do it if you was in school.
It was a little scuffle.
Right.
His mom got scared.
Yeah.
Yeah. His mom was overreacting.
Yeah.
His mom was overreacting.
Which of the following is Maya Angelou's first body of work?
Which of the following?
Well, I'll let you guess. I wasn't going to give you multiple.
Well, which of the following means you got to give us some examples.
Still I Rise.
No.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I know why the Caged Bird sings.
Is that their first one? That was a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite. I was just giving you my favorite one. And Still I Rise is my favorite Maya Angelou poem.
Okay. Do you have another one? I have two more.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm gonna do one. You do it, and I'll do another one.
Okay. Finish this lyric. Temporary layoffs. Good times. Easy credit ripoffs. Good time. Scratching and surviving. Good times.
You know what? That's before my time.
Okay. Yeah. Good answer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that is before my time. That's a little bit right
Jess
before.
Jess is only 32.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. But how did? Were you watching that?
I was.
You were? I did. Yeah. I never watched it. I watched. I feel like I watched every other show
except
Good Times. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but that Good Times would have been the 80s.
Yeah. It was the 80s.
Yeah, I was born in 92, but I watched it with my grandmother who watched me all the time.
So I watched almost all of the other ones, but not that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you're two for two, Candace.
I knew it was Good Times, but I didn't know the...
Got you.
Yeah. This is an easy one. Who's the first black woman to serve as a U.S. Supreme Court justice?
The first black woman to serve as a Supreme Court justice. Black woman. Is it now? Just now?
Yes.
It's her. It's, whatchamacallit? I can't believe I'm blanking on her name. I'm totally blanking on her name.
Two for three.
No. I'm just blanking on her name. I know her name. She literally just got in there, and I cannot. Okay, can you just so give me a first letter? See? Look at you.
No,
see?
I know it. I was just
her name, her name, her name about, is a little
I was,
tricky.
I was about to tell you.
Her name is a little tricky.
No, it's Ketanji Brown Jackson.
I was about to tell you Cardi B's real letter. Name.
Yeah, I was about to tell you
Cardi B's real name. I said, give me the first letter. Ketanji Brown, yeah.
Okay.
Wait, how do you actually say that though? Ketanji.
Ketanji.
Ketanji. She has a tricky first name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Finish this response. God is good.
God is good. Amen.
No, Candace. No.
I thought you were going to say God is great. Thank you for the 48.
God is great.
No.
God,
you're not going to give an answer.
I'm going to do you, Charlamagne. Yeah. Charlamagne, God is good.
All the time.
And all the time.
God is good.
That's right.
Where's that from?
Jesus Christ, Candace.
Church. God is good all the time.
But why do you say all the time back? Where's that from?
Black church. God is good all the time.
Church. Oh. Everybody said it.
No, I definitely didn't get that one. No, I guess I didn't go to enough black churches growing up.
Okay.
Candace, what's the correct amount of reasons to add to a potato salad?
Zero.
Okay.
Absolutely zero.
All right.
It's actually offensive. That was almost a racist question. That is the wildest thing I've ever seen.
You know she got a little Caribbean in her.
Like, you just don't put raisins in the salad. You just don't put raisins in the salad.
Okay.
Well, Candace, it was a pleasure.
Yes,
it was.
I believe in conversation over confrontation.
Thank you, guys.
I think that, you know, nowadays people just be wanting to, you know, talk to people just to have a moment and be angry. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yo, have a conversation with a person, let a person put their ideas out there, and let people decide how they feel about setting.
Yeah.
Right. And the biggest thing that I want to say is, like, please stop putting raisins in potato salad.
That's all you got. That's all you want to say. That's it. Ladies and gentlemen.
No, I'm kidding. Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate this. And I'll come back anytime.
All and right. When did you have the baby?
I just had the baby in November,
third. And literally don't look like you had the
baby. Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah. Three under three. We're living la vida loca, but it's a blessing. Family is always a blessing. Strive for family, man. It's changes you. It really does change you.
Has motherhood changed you in any way?
Yeah, it really has. Like, I've never been more secure in my life than since becoming a mom. I think it's hard being a woman when you grow up, but I think that when you have kids, kind of God's design gets into focus and you realize, like, your purpose. Like, you're like, wow, like, I know what to do here. Yeah. And especially, of course, if you're in a marriage, I am so sustained by my home life. Yeah. And so that's why I don't care what happens outside of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's Candace Owens, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It is our favorite time of the year here at the Black Effect. We're heading down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival. And we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast. Festival for more details.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.